Listening to WGXC, Accra, Hudson, Catskill, 90.7 FM.
You can find out about so many local events, like the traditional Irish music session. Every Sunday, there's an open Irish music jam at the Shamrock House in East Durham from 2 to 5 p.m. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org. And add your own event to the WGXC community calendar and have it read on the radio at 90.7 FM by going to wgxc.org and clicking on the community calendar.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program, administered in Greene County by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC's sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support to Wave Farm's radio station, WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Stephanie Medlock of LaPorte, Indiana. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in the WGXC newsroom with the WGXC Daily News for Thursday, April 13th. Go to the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. New York State of Politics reports that the state budget is almost 2 weeks late now, and virtually no one knows what will be in the budget when it is finally revealed. Quote, secrecy in Albany is like gravity, unquote, said Blair Horner of the New York Public Interest Research Group this week. Quote, it's one of those immutable laws of science and political physics, unquote. Governor Kathy Hochul's efforts to change the 2019 bail reform law, we know, is holding up the budget negotiations, but the public does not know much more than that. Interviewed on WGXC April 12th, Ulster County Assemblymember Sarah Hanna Shrestha said there is little information available about how bail reform might change.
Well, you know, there are a number of things being discussed, and the nature of the process is actually what's being discussed can even change day to day. You know, those are things that only people in the room really know. But what we know on the outside is that all of the concerns that people have around how the law is being implemented statewide can be addressed without necessarily changing the law. You know, I think that if, and you know, actually some legislators carry some bills that are related to the 2019 bail reform that we did, and it would have been more ideal to go through the legislative process than to ram this through the budget process. So the concern here is that we are ramming this through the budget process, and what's going to come out is eventually, no matter what it is, it's going to come out to a change in the law that puts more innocent people in jail.
Horner agrees that almost anything could come out of the budget negotiations that are largely between the governor and the heads of the state Senate and Assembly. Quote, the way that New York budgets play out because they're in secret is that things can get cooked up that no one knew was coming and were not adequately publicly vetted, unquote, said Horner. Quote, but by the time the public finds out, the trains have already left the station, unquote. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. Nancy Kern reports in Columbia Green Media that 43 Columbia County bridges received a poor rating in the Department of Transportation's 2022 New York State Highway Bridge Data. That is 17% of the county's 242 bridges, much worse than the 9.2% of bridges statewide rated as poor. Currently, Columbia County is working on the Valley View Bridge in Copaic and in the design phase on the 124-year-old Stuyvesant Falls Bridge in Stuyvesant, a new stall bridge which crosses the Roelof Jansen Kill between Claremont and Livingston and was closed last year because of its deteriorating condition, the Rossman Road Bridge in Stockport, and the Mill Hill Bridge in Gallatin. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Patricia R. Doxey reports in the Daily Freeman that Republican Representative Mark Molinaro said on April 12th that he would oppose any attempts by Congress to link passage of a debt ceiling increase or the federal budget to changes to Social Security or Medicare. He promised to vote against reducing benefits for those receiving them or now paying into the federal systems. Molinaro said, quote, under no circumstance will I vote for a debt ceiling limit or budget that diminishes Medicare or Social Security for senior citizens and those in the system today. Under no circumstance. There is a way by expanding economic growth, getting people back into the workforce. There is a way to both not only secure Medicare and Social Security services, but expand its benefit to those in future generations, and that is critically important, unquote. Molinaro lives in Dutchess County, out of the 19th Congressional District, which he represents in Congress. He was speaking April 12th at the Diamond Mills Hotel for the Ulster County Regional Chamber of Commerce monthly breakfast meeting. Molinaro said he has been working with Democrat Pat Ryan, who represents Molinaro's Dutchess County, and the rest of the 18th Congressional District. Molinaro and Ryan worked together on a bill reestablishing the Small Business Pipeline Act and to secure funding for the redevelopment of the former Tech City site in the town of Ulster. Molinaro said, quote, we as a nation are in a very dangerous place, and that place is where we lack the tolerance to accept different views and opinions, and we lack the willingness to come together to confront those things that challenge us. This feeling that we should only talk to those with whom we agree isn't healthy, unquote. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. Jamal Cutler reports in Columbia Green Media that new Lebanon officials are considering making their downtown more walkable, slowing down traffic on Route 20 and Route 22, and making the area more pedestrian-friendly and safer for bicycle riders. Town Supervisor Trista Haltling is looking for federal funding to pay for improvements in 2027. Haltling said, quote, right now we are in a public input session where we hear from the public on what that means to them. There are many different options, such as bike paths on both sides, a multi-use path on one side, sidewalks on one or both sides, crosswalks, etc. We will take the information from the public input session and create a few different possibilities to present back to the public to see what the community wants, unquote. School children waiting for buses in the area will be taken into account in the plans. Town officials will attempt to survey residents about what they want. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Thursday, April 13th. Local early morning temperatures range from 43 degrees in Steventown to 65 in Medusa. Regional average soil temperature is 51 degrees. Pollen levels will be high, and don't expect that to change. Blue skies, mild winds, and a high of 86 degrees happens at 2 p.m. Overnight, temperatures fall to 57 degrees. Tomorrow, same thing. Little cloudier if you want to avoid the UV, with a high of 84. Overnight, we see a low of 58, and Saturday has morphed into a bit of a cruel joke to those of you stuck inside all week. The morning will be nice, and we get a high of 75, but at 2 p.m., storm chances show up and remain all night. Sunday, light rain chances linger all day with a high of 66. Today's river temperature will be 46 degrees. And the tide strength will be low. That temperature is still below 50, but don't worry, it will catch up to the soil soon and you'll get your tides back. Sunset today will be at 7:19 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:14 a.m. Looking way up, we see sun is active with a 10% chance of X-class flares today. Solar wind speed is currently 406.8 kilometers per second at 2.9 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently terrible until dark, then far below 30 megahertz overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 2.6. Quiet. The current sunspot number is 127. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
There is nothing wrong with your television set. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are controlling transmission. If we wish to make it louder, we will bring up the volume. If we wish to make it softer, we will tune it to a whisper. We will control the horizontal. We will control the vertical. We can roll the image, make it flutter. We can change the focus to a soft blur or sharpen it to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit quietly and we will control all that you see and hear. We repeat, there is nothing wrong with your television set. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to the outer limits.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acro with the WGXC community calendar, which is full of all sorts of things for you to do in person and online, all kinds of ways. And you can even list your own event up there and have it read on the radio at WGXC.org. Click on the community calendar, click on the add an event button, and then just copy and paste whatever information about the event you have that you're helping to organize. And soon enough, you'll hear it read on the radio at 90.7 FM and seen around the world in the WGXC community calendar, WGXC.org. On Thursday, April 13th, Abby Lappin has Spring Movement and Music Storytime at the Hudson Area Library at 4 p.m. The Moral Panic Variety Hour is at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill on Thursday night from 7 to 9:30 p.m. the event is, and WGXC will have it on the radio from 8 to 9, and we'll have a live web stream of the entire event from 7 to 9:30 p.m. Thursday, April 13th at the Star Cinema Upstate Films Rhinebeck location, 32 Sounds is screening with director Sam Green present to discuss the movie, part of Upstate Films' Sonic Wave series as they've improved their sound system at both theaters in Rhinebeck and Saugerties. The First Reformed Church of Catskill has a spring rummage sale on Friday, April 14th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. The American Legion in Greenville hosts a community spaghetti dinner Friday, April 14th at 4:30 p.m. to 7 p.m. It's eat in or take out. Author Elizabeth Jack Scott is in conversation with Betsy Jacks at the Hudson Hall. Elizabeth Jack Scott is a descendant of Irish shipbuilders and a granddaughter of Baptist missionaries to India. Talks about some local history at the Hudson Opera House, 6 p.m. Friday, April 14th. The Springage Rummage Sale is Saturday, April 15th at the First Reformed Church of Catskill from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. There's an indoor winter farmers market at the Berkshire Housatonic Community Center in Berkshire County. That's from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturday, April 15th. The Museum of Firefighting in Hudson hosts Smokey Bear and his wildlife friends on Saturday, April 15th from 10:30 a.m. to noon. If you want to do something with the children, Saturday, April 15th, the film Murmur Remembered, that's about the band REM, is at the Orpheum Theater in Saugerties, 2 to 4:30 p.m. There's also a ukulele inn in Kingston on Saturday, April 15th from 2 to 4 p.m. Bring your ukulele to the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of the Catskills. And Medea Benjamin is at Time in Space Limited
on Sunday, April 16th from 4 to 5:30 p.m. She's the Code Pink co-founder, and she's got a new book called War in Ukraine, Making Sense of a Senseless Conflict. She's in person in Hudson at Time and Space Limited, 4 p.m. Sunday, April 16th. These are some of the events in the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
Hello and welcome. And you know, we have such great talent in this area that is internationally known. And it is just always wonderful to run into people, friends, and just really rediscover what they're doing. And one of those great talents is Stephanie Monroe from Bindlestiff. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for inviting me on the show, Mr. Randall. I appreciate it.
Well, you know, you've been on before, and I love what you guys do. And there's always something interesting and new happening with your company and your performances. Can you tell our audience a little bit about what you do and what is happening now with the Bindlestiff Circus?
Sure. Bindlestiff is, first of all, Bindlestiff is actually an old slang term for the stick and the bundle that a traveler would carry over their shoulders.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You know, before Samsonite. And so we've been travelers. We've spent the first, from like 1995 to 2001 or so, crisscrossing the United States, Canada, doing shows all over the place.
No, and I'm just stuck on the whole meaning of the word. Like, how would you use this? Like, this is my Bindlestiff. Have you seen my mm-hmm. Bindlestiff?
Yes. And actually, another way that the term came into popularity was during the period of Reconstruction between the end of the Civil War and the economic upheavals that happened, and the movements of people and money and ideas that was happening in the country. A lot of people hit the roads, and the people who were riding what was the new railroad around in the country were able to go from place to place to look for work, and they developed this sort of proto labor union of a sort, because they were able to leave graffiti and notes for each other in locations saying, "Don't stop here, the cops will run you out of town."
Oh, really? Okay.
"There's work here," or "There's friendly people that will feed you here. Here's a place to stay." So it was kind of like a mutual aid society. And the term Bindlestiff came to represent not just the stick in the bundle, but also the people, the travelers, the folks who were, you know, trying to better their lives and having to move from place to place to do it. So it got associated with very early labor unions in the United States also.
That is a wonderful meaning. And, you know, and now can we turn into a verb, to Bindlestiff? and that would be going to the circus. If I want to go to the circus, I'm gonna Bindlestiff.
Well, what we hope people aren't saying is, "I went to that show and I got Bindlestiffed."
No, we don't want them to say that.
Definitely a great, it's a good show, I promise.
Well, you just had, speaking of a great show, you just had a great performance, sold out performance over at the Hudson Hall.
We did. We were able to do two shows there. We had an afternoon show, and some of the youth from our circus after school programs performed. And then in the evening show, there was more of a cabaret vibe, a little bit more sophisticated humor. But all in all, great performances. Great to see lots of neighbors come out. And there was a big feeling of joy in the room, that's for sure. And then coming up in July, we're going to be working outside, and we're presenting a free show for the community, two free shows again, July 7th and 8th. With our mobile circus, the Flatbed Folly. So it's these beautiful custom-made wagons that can roll into town. Takes a little while to set it up, but once it's up, it's we're there to share in some good times. So we're looking forward to that.
You know, and what people may not know is that you and your traveling circus, you know, you are a fixture in New York City. You bring in joy and amazement and merriment and wonderment to all of the counties down in the city, as well as here.
That's true. We, during COVID, you know, like almost every industry had to reconsider what we do, how we do it. And the circus is no different. And our move was to try to take it outdoors. And so all through toward the end of 2020, 21, 22, we got these trucks rolling. We developed some prototypes. In 21, they went out rolling through all five boroughs. We did free shows all summer long, all through neighborhoods all over New York City. Many of them had been hit really hard by COVID and all the other stuff that happens in our society, you know, like economic push out, gentrification, all the social and cultural issues that we're having, you know, as members of communities. And so with support from the New York City Department of Transportation, which is in charge of closing streets, we got to do so many shows all over the city. And it was, you know, there, even in 2021 and 22, we probably entertained 75,000 New Yorkers.
Wow.
And that we were able to do that for free. So that's our goal, is to try to move towards presenting more free entertainment for folks, because, you know, ticket prices can be prohibitive. And a lot of families who are from Hudson no longer live right in Hudson and may not even have cars. So, you know, if you can get in here from Philmont or Stottville or Stockport, come on down to the bottom of Warren Street and see some really great free entertainment. And our plan is to have community food vendors and activities with some of the other great organizations that we partner with, and just have a full day of joy outside. And we're doing the same thing in Kingston on July 7th with an organization called My Kingston Kids. So it's a double whammy of circus joy in the Hudson Valley.
Well, I tell you, no one should miss a Bid Lucif show. I mean, there's so many oohs and ahs. I mean, I got to see you guys when you did a show outside the high school. And we were sitting there, and it was great because, you know, due to COVID, it was all social distance. And it was a sort of an amazing outdoor place to see your show. And I'm always just astonished at how many true oohs and ahs. Like, you have amazing acts, and you see, you know, yourself, your husband, and you and all of the other performers, and you just have to say, how did they do that? This is incredible. Oh, this looks really dangerous. Or, you know, it's just, these are truly great moments that take a lot of skill. Can you take our audience, like, through, how does that happen? How do you know? How does, it's just, you know, from the whole array of acts, or just have this astonishing quality that just creates wonderment. How does that come about?
I think circus appeals to particular kinds of expressive people who are looking for something a little bit more than theater or film or something, you know, like, and so it kind of combines the intensity of physical discipline that sport requires or dance requires, plus the expressiveness and the collaboration of theater and other types of, like, you know, performative art forms. And it just kind of mixes it all together in a way. Plus, we really rely on incredible contributions from technical people. We need riggers to design, like, those floats can hold a wire walker.
Right,
floats,
right.
We have new floats than the ones you saw last time around, that now we can do aerial stuff on these flatbeds. So it's, you know, and there's music that's written for these acts. People come to circus because they're creative and they want to express all of themselves in really innovative ways. And the people who come to watch circus, I think, come to see some edges pushed. I think people
absolutely,
you know, come to be thrilled, and they come to see folks sort of defying reality, defying gravity, and embodying a dream. And that's kind of what we're hoping.
Well, that's what happens. As you say, it's sort of an edge of your seat experience. Like you're just looking and you're just wondering, how is this being done? And wow. And it's just, and it is so joyful to see people perform at that level. And so, and it seems that they're young people and all, there's a whole diverse range of people just really doing incredible lean in stuff.
I get really excited about it too, because over the years, almost 17 years that I've been able to work with youth in Hudson teaching circus arts, I'm able to show, you know, we're able to show kids like, this is where you can go with this if you want to put the time in, if you want to dedicate yourself to this. And not only as performer, but, you know, as a technician, as a producer, as an audio engineer, as a composer, as a choreographer, as a costumer. And so over the past few years, we've done workshops for youth in things like costuming, of course, in circus skills. The teens who work with us are actually on hand for setting up the shows and helping as, you know, production assistants. Right. They run our merchandise tables. They learn how to market. They help promote. So hopefully we're showing also that the arts as a creative field are a really valuable part of our culture, but also of our economy. Like it makes a difference that you can make a living doing something that you love and that brings you joy and others joy. And that's really important to me as well.
Absolutely. And how do you teach both sides of the spectrum? Like you have the performance spectrum, where, you know, you have this incredible feat, you know, of strength, of agility, of balance. And then, you know, as you mentioned, there's a whole performance factor, because you're not just doing this, absolutely, you're doing this for the audience. And so they're very expressive. Your performers are very expressive. I mean, they're showing the audience and they're very demonstrative about that. At the same time, in doing these incredible, sophisticated, seemingly from the outside, dangerous activities. And yet they're smiling and performing. And, you know, it's just an engrossing experience to have, you know, all of that together. Like in music, I play music and I know a lot of people that play well and they're at the virtuoso level. They're not necessarily great performers, you know, but they're great. You know, but they're great at what they do. But that is married in what you do, whereas, you know, they're entertaining and doing something extraordinary at the same time, and, you know, and engaging the audience. How do you, is that something you can teach, or is it something that has to be in the person?
I think it's both things. I think some of us are very naturally extroverted and get excited about sharing things that we love. But I think it also comes from practice. And one of the things that we do, you know, all throughout with every grade and age level throughout Circus After School is to create a safe environment where youth feel free to express themselves. They feel supported by their peers. And so they can take little by little larger risks. Like, whether it's in class, standing up to show a new trick they learned. At the end of the season, we always do a show and invite parents so that they perform in front of community members. And then, you know, as they, there's always that confidence building, but it's not easy. I think we're inviting people to take risks and say, you know, this feels weird. It might feel awkward, but remember, like, people are here and they appreciate what you're learning, you know, what you're doing, and people are excited that you're going to share it with them. So, you know, there's that constant conversation happening around developing the skill, working through the frustration of it, building up the confidence, and then, you know, being able to stand up in front of your community and take up space in a way that, I think those are transferable skills, and it's not just about showing off circus tricks. It's also about developing your voice, identifying who you are as a person. And I hope that, you know, anecdotally, I see the confidence in teens that I've known since they were 8 and 9, who are now 15, 16, 17. And I'm always, I just am blown away by what they accomplish. So I think it works. And I think circus is a really fun way to do it because it's safe, supported risk taking. I'm not going to hand three chainsaws to a third grader and say juggle, but we build to that.
We have on the line with us Sarah Hanna Shrestha, the Ulster County-based Democratic Socialist Assembly member. Sarah Hanna, can you hear us?
Yes.
Oh, good. We can hear you now, too.
Great.
Let's get you there. I guess the picture that the Albany Press Corps sort of paints of this week or last week is that Carl Heastie and Andrea Stewart-Cousins and Kathy Hochul are in a room horse trading. Is that what is going on, or what is it like for what do assembly members and senators who are not Carl Heastie and Andrea Stewart-Cousins do all week?
Well, you know, I can speak for the assembly. So the people who are actually quite in the thick of it are the central staff that the assembly has, as well as the Senate has. And, you know, they've been working overtime to make sure that the negotiations are going, and they are the ones who support the speaker as well as the majority leader. And for us, we basically don't really get to hear the full details of what's being discussed, but we sort of get the top line updates, you know. So we know, for example, and it's no secret that a huge part of the reason the budget is late is because the governor really wanted to have a resolution on the bail reform rollback that she wants to do before she was willing to move on to other things. And, you know, we're talking about a budget that has hundreds of line items. And but we know that for her, this was sort of the holdup before her team was really willing to move forward. And so we passed another extender on Monday. And I think that we expect the budget to be passed within the next 2 weeks, really.
the governor wants more judicial discretion to give people bail. Is that correct?
Well, you know, there are a number of things being discussed, and the nature of the process is actually what's being discussed can even change day to day. You know, those are things that only people in the room really know. But what we know on the outside is that all of the concerns that people have around how the law is being implemented statewide can be addressed without necessarily changing the law. You know, I think that actually some legislators carry some bills that are related to the 2019 bail reform that we did. And it would have been more ideal to go through the legislative process than to ram this through the budget process. So the concern here is that we are ramming this through the budget process, and what's going to come out is eventually, no matter what it is, it's going to come out to a change in the law that puts more innocent people in jail while they're waiting for their trial. Because we know, you know, there are a few things we already know, which is that a lot of people who get charged with something and then are held, their charges actually never become actual cases, right? They are a majority of them are dropped. And this is especially true where it's people of color and poor people involved. People get arrested all the time, even when they might not have done anything, you know? So those are the folks that we really try to protect, you know, because
and everyone is actually innocent in the eyes of the court until
yes.
the trial happens. So all these people yes. are actually innocent, right?
Yes. And, you know, we want to make sure that we don't lose sight of the fact that the whole reason bail exists is because people come back to the court, right? That's the use of it. They return for their court date. And so we are really talking about people who cannot afford to pay the bail and what happens to them if it's low-level crimes. You know, working people who don't have the money to pay bail, it usually means they might have a hard time. You know, when they are detained pre-trial, they might be losing their job, right? Their family might be losing their source of income. So we're just destabilizing a lot of families in this process. And those are the folks that we're trying to protect because it is a matter of civil rights, right? Like you said, you're innocent until you're proven guilty, and you're not really guilty until you have your trial and you're found to be guilty. So it is a civil rights issue that is being broached upon. And, you know, It's regrettable that this is mostly happening for political purposes around people's ideas of what re-elects them.
The Republicans think they did well in the congressional elections in New York on this particular issue, right?
Yeah, but the truth is, you know, the governor had a rough election after already having just done a bail reform rollback in the last budget, you know. So the truth is that many, you know, and I actually talked to some of my more conservative constituents over the weekend. And when they did have concerns about the bail reform, it was mostly about violent crimes. But also, no matter what the governor does on that, these are the type of constituents who are just not going to vote for the governor, no matter what. You know, so it's a little bit of a bad political game where we are endangering people to say, look, I did this. But in reality, what's going to happen is that no matter what happens in this budget, you know, it's not going to change the governor's popularity. Nobody's going to give the Democrats for having solved public safety just because we did further rollback on bail. You know, that none of that is going to actually materialize. So it's sort of a fear-based politics. And for us, you know, we know all these truths. We know that we have to protect the people who will be most harmed by this. And, you know, a lot of the times we're talking about the whole family being harmed. So that's where we're at. But that's really the main reason the budget is late.
So I'm still trying to figure out what you guys do during this gray period, or when the horse trading is going on. Like last week, there was this proposal that Dede Barrett backed and the governor backed, and to count the way I think methane was counted in a different way that the fossil fuel industry loved and was all in favor of them counting this other way, which seemed to be it wasn't very good for the environment if the fossil fuel industry loved it. But it got the governor backed off of it, and the bill seems like it's like not going anywhere now. What happened? Were there thousands of phone calls? Did you all lobby the governor, or what happened to make that change?
Yeah. So to answer your question about what happens during this gray area is that it is exactly the time period for me personally to not let our guards down, right? We have to remain we have to find a way to remain clued into what might be some of the conversations that are coming up. And sometimes we find out about things from the press. And sometimes what the press has said actually turns out to be wrong. So there's like multiple layers of gaming happening here, you know. Sometimes the press might be given information to sort of steer the course of how the negotiations could go, you know, based on what the press is saying. So it's a very important time to stay vigilant, and also anything that we hear might be in play to actually sort of like try to you know, understand what implications they would have, and whether we need to respond to something. And that's what happened with the methane accounting issue. This bill popped up that was carried by the two chairs of energy. And I haven't spoken to them, but it was something that we heard from the outside that the governor's team was considering. And we just responded because we don't know how true this is, but we have to respond for any chance that this might be true, right? And that's exactly what happened. We mobilized very quickly. We held multiple rallies. There were lots of people.
There was a protest Saturday in Hudson outside of Assemblyperson Barrett's office. Mm. I think that was after it seemed clear that it wasn't going to happen, but I probably was planned before that.
Yeah, and that was an amazing example of how quickly the walk back from it was very quick. First, it was not even confirmed that this was in the play. Then we really learned that it was in play when they walked back from it. So, you know, for us, it's really a time to just remain vigilant and continuously strategize. If what we're hearing is true, you know, what do we need to do to build pressure to make sure that the message is going across that we do not want this? And we just have to try everything because we have no idea what's going to work. And with this methane accounting, the response did work. And I think actually one of the indirect effects that happened from it is all of the various concerns that different groups have, that different legislators have. I think it sort of reminded us to remain vigilant and, you know, and watch all of the conversations that are happening in whatever our priority issues might be.
Because part of the budget, you're trying to pass this electrification of buildings bill, right?
Yes. Well, so actually the governor proposed in her own executive budget pretty much the same thing as the bill, but with a further out timeline. And the bill's timeline, which is coming from more of a climate expertise, is a little bit closer. And this is for new buildings. And it's because the carbon emissions that happen from buildings is one of the highest sources in New York. And also because once new buildings are built with fossil fuel infrastructure, it is much more expensive to go back and do retrofits. You know, so if there is the right kind of attention and investment made into new buildings at a certain timeline being electric, it could actually even be cheaper for a lot of you know, people who are building these homes. It could turn out to be cheaper, and that's what we want to try to make sure is happening, is that, you know, we're passing something like this, but we're also seeing through the implementation to make sure that people are getting the full benefits out of it, you know, financial benefits as well as health benefits.
So right now, what do you think are the most important issues that listeners might be focused on or worried about, or you think they should call the governor about? What are the big issues you think at the moment?
You know, I think the main message people should give to the governor is that people really, really need to see the affordability crisis addressed. A lot of it is coming from our energy sector and from our housing sector. You know, eviction rates are through the roof, not just in big cities, but all over the state. And so the governor has proposed her housing compact, and which is trying to address the supply issue of housing. But we are saying, and, you know, this is still very much in flux, right? Nothing has really been agreed upon or signed off by anyone. But we are saying that just saying build more units is not going to solve anything, because we need a way to ensure that these new units are affordable, first of all, that people who get to move into these units are people who are currently having a hard time finding units, and not new people moving in from other states or whatever, you know? But for immediate relief, most of all, we need to make sure that people, tenants especially, who are currently really struggling with staying housed are protected right away. So part of the picture is that it can't just be supply. It has to be a holistic approach. So part of the picture are housing access vouchers, which is for transitioning people from, you know, a volatile housing situation to a stable housing situation. And then the good cause protections, which is basically a protection against price gouging. A lot of people think that good cause is universal rent control, which it's not. It still actually allows the landlord to raise their rent really as much as they want. But if it's more than 150% of the consumer price index, the tenant has the right to have the landlord explain the reason for increase in court. So it gives, you know, it basically impacts all these LLCs and landlords who are trying to evict people just because they can charge however much they want. So it's leveling the playing field. And it also has many circumstances under which the landlord does have the right to evict the tenants, such as non-payment, such as if they need the space for themselves, for their personal use. You know, so the bill lists out various circumstances under which the landlord does have the right to evict or not renew their lease. And this is going to be very important for stabilizing our neighborhoods, because right now what's happening is LLCs are buying up a bunch of homes, and people are just not able to remain staying where they've always stayed.
Yeah, we're running stories almost daily about towns trying to pass laws or do something about the affordable housing crisis, because people that have lived in places in Greene and Columbia County are being forced out because so many people coming in, the rent's going up, no one's building affordable housing. They're building expensive housing if anybody's building anything.
Yes. And there's also sort of a domino effect. You know, when people in the city are being displaced, they will move maybe a little bit north, right? And then when those folks are being displaced, maybe they'll move a little bit of north, you know? And we, you know, people who are against taxing the ultra-rich always talk about, oh, but the millionaires will leave the state. But what's actually happening is that people who cannot afford to live in New York are the ones who are leaving the state in large numbers. And a lot of them are, you know, people of color, you know, from the city. It's like a new pattern of people of color leaving the state and just going to another state that's cheaper to live in.
All right. Anything else that you want to mention to people? We're talking to Sarah Hannah Shrestha, the Ulster County Assembly member, about the state budget, which is now 2 weeks late. What are we at, the 12th?
Yes, we're 2 weeks.
And it's going to be at least 3 or 4 weeks late, you're saying, right?
We're hoping really by August 24th that we have, April 24th, yeah, that we have a budget. But even if this budget passes next week, it's still going to be the most late budget since 2010. And that budget was 125 days late. So we're not there yet. But I do want to mention one more thing, which is my priority climate/energy bill, which is Build Public Renewables Act. You know, the whole state has actually for a long time been experiencing challenges with just utilities, your utilities where you get electricity and gas from. But
certainly
in our
central
district,
Hudson, yes.
Exactly. In our region, specifically out of all of the utilities, and they are all bad, but out of all of them, I would say Central Hudson is quite possibly the worst. And that's because they did that billing system rollout, which was full of errors. And, you know, our office is actually going through people's bills collected over a year or maybe even more. We're trying to go even further back to really figure out what is happening in these bills. And there are a few things that we're seeing. One is estimated billing is causing a lot of confusions, even when they're right. But bills should be very easy to read. You know, that's one thing that I feel strongly about. And then there's issues with people who did not receive bills for months, and then they suddenly received a big bill, and then they were not able to pay. And they were not able, basically they sort of it interrupted their track record of consistently paying bills when they got that big bill, you know. So that's the second issue. And we do have a bill right now in the state legislature that I co-sponsored that says if it's been 2 months, you can't back bill. And also you have to provide 2 years worth of history of the charges. So that's one bill that's on the table. And the other issue we're seeing, of course, is the supply costs have been very volatile. And Central Hudson says they have nothing to do with supply costs, which is for the most part true, but it is still an issue. And this bill, Build Public Renewables Act, is going to mandate New York Power Authority to build affordable renewable energy that is not being hit by the output that's coming from the private market. Because the problem is the private market has just been very sluggish. You know, our renewable energy levels are very low. And also the private market is building energy that has a profit markup. So we actually want to empower and instruct New York Power Authority to fill in the gap of affordable renewable energy. And this is very much alive in the budget negotiations. You know, we're discussing labor provisions, we're discussing mandates, we're discussing timeline. But one thing that is more or less a guarantee to come out of this proposal is some way to provide lower relief to, you know, bills that are going to low and moderate income households. So we are discussing the process for doing that, but the intention to do that is very much at the center of this conversation. But that on the climate front, that's been my priority bill, because there's really, you know, we can't really have our transition without having clean energy that is also not high prices, you know, that is very attainable for people, because we cannot leave climate responsibility to individuals. We have to do this at a systemic level and not in a way where only people who have money can afford to go green.
And certainly energy and housing are the two most expensive part of most budgets in the Hudson Valley, and have been more expensive in the past couple years. Hopefully some of these bills will get passed and the budget will help alleviate some of that.
Yes, I hope so too. And then we'll have to see through the implementation to make sure that, you know, things don't fall through the cracks once the bills have passed as well.
And again, you urge folks to call their assembly member or their state senator, whether it be up here, Chris Tague, Dee Dee Barrett, or Michelle Hinchey, support, or if you're against those bills, you should tell them too, right?
Yeah, and especially the governor. Call the governor during office hours when a person will actually answer the phone. And, you know, the main thing to ask her is to really not hold the budget up, to not get hung up on bail reform, and to actually deliver on tenant protections and energy affordability, and especially clean energy affordability.
All right. We've been speaking with Sarah Hannah Shrestha, the Ulster County Assembly member, updating us on what's going on with the budget negotiations in Albany. Hopefully it'll only be another week or a couple days. And then do you guys get a break after that?
No, well, next week was actually when our session was supposed to resume. So nobody's really clear on what's going to happen to that. But, you know, the remainder of the session is when we pass the non-budget bills.
So it's right back to
work.
Yeah,
yes.
So people should be engaged because a lot of those bills will be important too, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, maybe we'll have you back in a couple of weeks to talk about that when that process is getting more along there.
Sounds good.
At the Wave Farm, we are listening into the animals and the atmosphere. Sounds like we have crickets and Hondas. In the near 80-degree weather today, I saw a first garden snake warming itself in the sunny part of a forest path. But as you can hear, there is all sorts of animal activity at Wave Farm now. Listening to Zach Paul's Pond Station with hydrophones in the bottom of the Wave Farm pond. Quintron's weather warlock turning the sensing of precipitation, sunlight, wind, and temperature, the changes in those, into sound. It's also Quintron's traffic sacks beaming in the sounds from Route 23 in Acre. Also the test site for Acoustic Commons. Open microphone in the woods at Wave Farm. The solar radio project is also included in our soundscape, as is the Here Goes Radio Telescope. Each of these web streams is available separately or together online at wavefarm.org/listen or wgxc.org/listen, or click on the Listen button on any Wave Farm or WGXC webpage.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Rachel Silberstein reports for the Times Union that Governor Kathy Hochul said April 11th that New York will stockpile 150,000 doses of mifepristone, a drug used in medication abortions. Last week, a judge in Texas invalidated federal approval of the abortion pill that has been widely prescribed in the U.S. for more than 20 years. Hochul said in a statement, and I quote, "Anti-choice extremists have shown that they are not stopping at overruling Roe, and they are working to entirely dismantle our country's reproductive health care system, including medication abortion and contraception." New York will always be a safe harbor for abortion care, and I'm taking action to protect abortion access in our state and continue to lead the nation in defending the right to reproductive autonomy, end quote. On April 10th, the U.S. Justice Department moved to appeal the ruling made by U.S. District Court Judge Matthew Kaczmarek, an appointee of former President Donald Trump. New York Attorney General Letitia James, leading a multi-state coalition of attorney general, filed an amicus brief on April 10th, arguing the Texas decision could curtail abortion access for millions of Americans. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Nancy Kern reports for Columbia Green Media that Greene County's Economic Development Tourism Committee voted recently for the renewal of a 20-year tax break for Athens Generating. The payment in lieu of taxes planned means the power plant will pay millions less in taxes. Everyone on the committee, including Catskill's Michael Bulich and Durham's Patty Handel, voted for the tax break, except Athens legislator Ed Bloomer, who voted against the plan. Bloomer said, and I quote, "I listened intently for people arguing for both sides in all of those cases. These are people who I respect and I acknowledge as being far more learned and wise than I. My takeaway from that is my suspicion that if the pilot goes forward, it would be a positive benefit for all parties. However, I've uncovered a significant volume of the people of Athens who are disagreeing with that, even though I personally think that it's the best way to go. As their legislator, I feel I am bound to honor their concerns. With that, I have to maintain a reluctant no," end quote. A March 20th Athens public meeting about the proposal featured mostly those against the tax break for the natural gas power plant. Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. Nick Reisman reports at Spectrum News that Republican Representative Elise Stefanik announced on April 11th that she will run again in 2024 for the 21st Congressional District and has raised $3 million over the first 3 months of the year for her campaign. Stefanik is the House Conference Chair, the third Republican in line running the U.S. House of Representatives. Because of redistricting, the 21st Congressional District now includes Rensselaer County. The Malone Telegram reported on April 10th that Matt Castelli, the Democrat challenger to Stefanik last year, will not run again in 2024. In her statement announcing the 2024 run, Stefanik firmly aligned herself with the recently indicted former president. Stefanik said, and I quote, "We will work our hardest to defeat the Democrats across New York and the country to protect and expand our House majority and elect President Trump in 2024, end quote. Read more about this story at Spectrum News. Paul Kirby reports for the Daily Freeman that a few months ago, Representative Pat Ryan was on the floor of Congress asking for the CEO of Central Hudson Gas and Electric Corp. to resign. Now, after Central Hudson did change CEOs, the Democrat lawmaker and the embattled local power provider are teaming up for in-person, one-on-one customer service sessions to deal with individual billing problems. Ryan has been a persistent critic of Central Hudson's past estimated billing practices, as many local customers are getting giant bills and threats of turnoffs. Ryan, who represents the 18th Congressional District, said on April 11th that, and I quote, "At this point, the most productive way to fix these issues is to get people to sit down and look each other in the eye. We have an agreement for Central Hudson to work with my office to hold a series of meetings to give constituents so much as a chance to sit one-on-one with Central Hudson and figure out any issues with their bill," end quote. The two sides do not yet have specific details about the meetings. Central Hudson has eliminated the estimated billing, added nearly 50 new positions in customer billing and consumer outreach departments, and promises hiring another 36 people for its customer contact center. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or